name is Elle Wadsworth, and welcome to another episode of Addiction Audio, the podcast from the journal Addiction. I'm joined here today with Paul Griffiths, the scientific director of the European Monitoring Centre on Drugs and Drug Addiction. He's here to talk about his and his co-author's editorial titled Opioid Problems Are Changing in Europe, with worrying signals that synthetic opioids may play a more significant role in the future. Welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Good morning.
As a brief introduction, and Paul can no doubt speak to this better than I can, Paul and his co-author's editorial discusses the situation in Europe with regards to opioids and synthetic opioids both today and where we'll be heading in the very near future. I'm sure our listeners are aware that there's an opioid crisis happening in the US and Canada, currently driven by illicitly manufactured fentanyl and other synthetic opioids. Until now, opioid as a whole has remained relatively, compared to US and Canada, crisis-free, albeit with some outbreaks of overdoses. Indeed, when Paul compared the adult mortality rate of overdose deaths in North America to Europe, North America's rate was 17 times higher. However, it's been talk recently about fentanyl and synthetic opioids becoming an increasing problem in Europe, predicted to be exacerbated by the Taliban's poppy ban in Afghanistan. So, Paul, to start, for those listeners who do not know, could you briefly explain what we mean when we say synthetic opioids and why they are a problem and what led you to write this editorial?
Well, I guess what prompted us to write this editorial is that we're a little bit more worried now than we used to be, that some of the things we were saying about synthetic opioid vulnerability in Europe were changing or potentially changing. And we needed to really start thinking what we needed to do now to respond to that. And I think looking at some of the more recent data, and events are moving very rapidly in this area at the moment, it's not really now a future threat. It's actually a current problem that we really need to consider a little bit what it means for our response options and what it means for the long-term problems we might face in this area. I think most people listening to this podcast will be aware of the opiate epidemic in America, know something about the history of that, how it started off perhaps as a heroin problem located in some communities. Over time, we saw the medicinal opiates coming in, the prescription drug problem. Then we saw that actually potentiating again, heroin market. And then very rapidly that market turned into a synthetic opiate market driven by fentanyls, range of different types of fentanyls and that thing in that drug class. And these are much more highly potent. I mean, I have to be careful when I talk about potency, because it can mean different things to different people, but potentially a number of issues about the pharmacology makes them potentially more dangerous, both to those consuming these drugs, but also those coming to environmental contact with them. But also the fact that rather than being plant-based opium, the heroin of Bolivia that you need to grow in a field somewhere, you need to then convert, you need to transport across multiple borders. These could be made in labs, actually very often very cheaply, relatively easily. And potentiating both profits for organised crime groups involved in drug supply and reducing risks by not having to move lots of bulky plant-based drugs across borders. So you can actually make these drugs much nearer to the markets that they're intended for. And very small volumes, they're so highly potent that very small volumes can equate to many, many hundreds of thousands of treat doses. So this clearly poses advantages for those that are involved in drug production, but it also poses real threats and I think concerns for us in terms of public health impact.
You touched upon supply there, and from the editorial and then a wider piece that the EMCDA have published around an in-depth analysis on heroin and opioids, it says that Mexico is the main supply route for the synthetic opioids in the US. In Europe, would we have the capabilities to produce this on scale in-house, so to speak, as in within our borders of Europe, or would it be more outside of those borders, such as China or India or Russia, I believe, were the three countries that were noted?
Okay, I mean, again, it's quite interesting, very different in terms of European situation to the North American situation. Although, again, if you look forward, we might see some parallels coming in the future that we haven't really had to address up to now. If we look at, take the fentanyls in Europe, in the most recent data we have, and it's not perfect data from say around 2021, we had really about 150 deaths where we had good toxicological evidence that they related to a fentanyl. But in about half of those, the fentanyl was coming, looked likely to have been diverted from medical use. So that's actually a long-term problem we've had going back decades in Europe. There's been a little bit of a diversion from medical use of fentanyl used in pain relief, from patches or from medicines. Often it's to do with poor waste disposal practices in medical settings, or it's diversion from medical staff or from patients. And it's a residual but small problem. And I think it's also one that you can address through standard regulatory approaches to tightening it up, both looking at what you do in prescribing, what you do in waste management. Very small numbers of fentanyls deaths related to illicitly produced fentanyls. But we know, and again, going back decades, that we've had odd instances of synthetic laboratories producing fentanyl. We had one earlier this year in Lithuania. And these are often very small labs, but because of the potency of these drugs, it means very small production runs can have quite a big impact on local drug consumption patterns and mortality, morbidity. So we saw a few years ago, 10 or 15 years, one lab in Central Europe, and we had a very brief outbreak of deaths in about three countries, all related to a very, very small kitchen lab. It was actually in someone's kitchen, but it had an impact on a number of countries around there briefly, but important at the time. Now, if we look more generally, we have very large synthetic drug production capacity in Europe. So we're now a major exporter of drugs like MDMA. We also produce methamphetamine, not usually for consumption in Europe, but for consumption outside Europe. And we also produce quite a lot of amphetamines and nalcathinones. Some of those go into the European market, and some of them go into Gulf market, converting drugs like Captagon, or sold as drugs like Captagon, to be more precise. So we have synthetic drug production capacity in Europe, and we have quite sophisticated drug production capacity in Europe. There has been very little recent evidence outside a few, mostly labs in the Baltic countries, a few other places in Central Europe. We've seen a few instances of fentanyl, car fentanyl production, but very sporadically and small. But we have seen, I think, in our geographically located in our sort of major drug producing area, the countries we know of where a lot of synthetic drug production takes place, some seizures of precursor chemicals linked, quite large seizures of precursor chemicals linked to fentanyl production. And nobody really knows what they were intended for, whether it was production in Europe, whether it was an export somewhere else. So if you put that all together, I think it would be fair to say that there is no significant barriers, or the barriers are quite low to the scaling up of synthetic drug production in Europe. We also know, and I think this is kind of a little bit more existential threat, but something to be worried about. We also know that we have seen some Mexican organized crime groups, chemists, based on them, working in Europe, working in methamphetamine production. So we know links exist between organized crime groups involved in drug production. And we also know that Mexican and some other South American organized crime groups are working with European crime groups quite closely in terms of cocaine importation. And we've seen massive increase in cocaine availability use actually in Europe. Huge increases in flows into Europe. And that's being that often involves collaboration between Latin American or Mexican crime groups and European crime groups. And one of the concerns there is that there is a little bit of noise, at least, that as the North American market gets saturated in terms of fentanyls, as we're seeing more evidence of fentanyl synthetic opiate problems in Mexico, so actually a domestic problem that's looking very nasty and growing at the time, that at least it may be that there is a possibility that those crime organizations begin to see Europe as a potential market, and they certainly have the infrastructure to do that because that's established for cocaine, and they're moving huge volumes of cocaine to Europe. It would be synthetic opioids are so much smaller in volume, you can see a real risk there. So if we put that all together, And then we put that in the context of a possible herring drought arising from the Taliban's restrictive measures on opium production in Afghanistan. Then I think we've got quite a lot to worry about. So we haven't seen that. But should the market conditions be potentiate that or be amenable to that, there's no reason I think you couldn't either see drug producers within Europe pivoting quite quickly to producing synthetic opioids, or organised crime groups used to supplying the North American market, seeing Europe as a potentially new market for products as that market has become relatively saturated.
I've read before that this contrast between whether it's demand driven or supply driven. Is the rise in synthetic opioids going to be purely because of how you've described, i.e. the drought coming from the heroin supply routes from Afghanistan and the potential for us to scale up production of synthetic opioids? Or is there an element of demand driven as well, of consumers wanting these products?
People often have this polar argument: is it demand driven, is it supply driven? And I think what we've really got to understand that demand and supply come together in drug markets. Drug markets are highly complex and dynamic, and they change over time. We can see that for North America. We can see heroin going into pharmaceutical opioids, going to diversion of those drugs, going into heroin again, then going into synthetic opioids, and then the pharmaceuticals also coming in. And so I think these are complex, dynamic situations. And also remember people talking that when the fentanyls first appeared in Canada, for example, that, you know, a lot of the users didn't want those. People who use drugs, they were wanting to find heroin, but they were being, the market was pushing onto fentanyl. You hear now the opposite, which is consumers seek out fentanyl and it's become a job, the drug of choice. So these are complex and dynamic situations where both demand and supply interact to create a market, and that can have I think the dynamic relationship that changes over time. So I think in some ways it's the wrong question to ask if is it supply driven or demand driven, as with other markets. They're more complicated than that. It's both in respect. I think what we worry about a little bit in terms of Europe is that there is not a very dynamic opioid market. We see a very dynamic stimulant market. We see a very dynamic, complicated market where new drugs are coming in and medicinal products and study aid, all sorts of things in there. But up to now, we've seen quite a stable market in terms of heroin. So we've seen the big problems that Europe faced from 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s with the heroin epidemic, often driven by heroin injection. But really, we haven't in the last decade have seen lots of new initiations in that. So it's been really dealing with a historical problem in most countries. And we've also had, I think, very effective interventions in terms of providing opioid agonist medicines. And in some ways, what we've done is offer effective therapy, but we've also competed with the illicit opiate market to make it unattractive in some countries. So increasingly, we're seeing other opiates floating around out there, even when we look into the data on heroin. And we were predicting just through the, if we were looking at an aging population, very little evidence of new initiation, very declining rates of heroin injection, actually more complicated injection patterns are happening elsewhere, but declining rates of heroin injection in terms of people coming into treatment, and really the aging, lots of indications of an aging population that was becoming very vulnerable, probably more vulnerable. Many, many healthcare needs, not always adequately met, but I guess in Europe, better met than many parts of the world. And over time, you would expect that simply through the natural aging process, that problem to diminish if those population dynamics continued. So in some sense, we were really not seeing the situation in the US, but I think we do see that what we do learn from the US is how rapidly these things can change, and how the combination of market and demand and supply factors can develop new problems. So I guess the worry would be that if we do see a heroin drought, that could create both a need for us to respond more in terms of offering treatment and trying to bring in those people using heroin who are not currently engaged with services. So that would be one need. But there was also this potential to potentiate a synthetic opiate market. So we would be very worried about responding to that. And there would be issues there about how, if that's going to lead to increased risks for that population, if that's going to increase overdose. And we've seen some of those things recently in outbreaks in Ireland, for example. But I think if I go downstream a little bit, a few years down, then we also have, often these drugs are appearing in new forms and new mixtures. They're mixed with xylazine, a very strong, we've seen examples of that, mixed with very strong veterinary tranquilizer. We've seen sedative. We've seen them mixed with benzodiazepines. We've seen them appearing as medicinal products or synthetic or in drugs that might appeal to different sections of the drug using community. And I guess our concern would be that it may not have the same stigma and negative associations that injecting heroin use has generated with a lot of young people over time. And in a more polydrug using younger population, these drugs could find a niche. I'm not saying this will happen, but it's certainly not something we could rule out. And then that would be the, I guess, the worst case scenario, is that not only do we have the dealing with synthetic opiate problems with amongst a long-term heroin using cohort, but we also start seeing new synthetic opiate related problems or opiate used in polydrug use situations amongst a younger age cohort. And just looking then at the example from America, the worry there would be that you could actually see in 5 or 10 years from now a new opiate problem in Europe that we were not facing before. I mean, we've seen that a lot of interest in stimulant drugs. We see a lot of polypharmacology. We see a lot of mixtures and new technologies. So I'm not, whilst there doesn't seem to be a lot of new consumer interest in the idea of injecting heroin use, I'm not so sure that would hold for some of these new synthetic opiates, especially if they were marketed in clever new forms or using new technologies. And we've seen synthetic opiates appear in things like nasal sprays and e-cigarettes, and recently also mixed with cannabis smoking mixtures. So they can appear in lots of different forms. And they can also, that means they can also impact on, at the moment, the big issue is that you can opiate naive individuals, as well as people who are used to using opiates, be exposed to them. And I guess that creates two concerns for us. One is simply from a response point of view, you may not be looking at it. If someone thinks they're consuming cocaine or smoking a synthetic cannabinoid mix, so you're not going to necessarily think, first of all, about opiate exposure. And also they're opiate naive, so they may be more at risk from lower dose exposure. So I think there's a lot of short-term concerns about what we're beginning to see now. We've seen in 2023, and we're continuing to see in 2024 in some countries. So we've seen recent outbreaks linked not to the fentanyls, but actually to the nitrazine synthetic opioids. And quite dramatic problems. Some stuff, I don't know if you've recently seen what happened in Dublin, but very alarming, really overwhelming public health response in a very short time period, a very different sort of problem we're used to dealing with in terms of opioid overdose. And then just looking forward to the future, I really think we need to be mindful now to think about how do we monitor and put in mitigating measures necessary, least we end up with the sort of problems, maybe not in the same way at the same scale, but going in the same direction as some of the developments we've seen in North America.
Okay, so you touched on monitoring there. And so I want to bring out what was also mentioned in the editorial about how we monitor this and how we monitor if there's any increase in synthetic opioids, whether that be fentanyl, whether that be nitrazines. One thing that comes to mind is wastewater capabilities, but I was just wondering on your end, what are we looking for? What are we using in our arsenal to see if there's an increase in synthetic opioid use?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to really invest more in forensic and toxicological resources. Yeah. Just to give you the situation in Latvia. In Latvia, if we look in 2022, there was two confirmed overdose deaths linked to nitrazines. In 2023, we've got at least 38 now. But it's important to know that they could only had the capacity to identify nitrazines in biological samples from around late 2023. So in fact, that corresponds to the last part of the year. So we're seeing the same in many countries. So I think in terms of the early warning data we have, we have an early warning system for new psychiatric substances in Europe. So we get case reports of the presence of substances. So we know that all but five EU member states, I think it is now, have a reported, and it's seen on the territory. But we don't know from those that haven't, is it just because they haven't been tested for it? They haven't come across it. And we know that many countries will not have the as yet scaled up the capacity to routinely test for these substances within their in overdose cases, either in usually people who have non-fatal overdoses, might be no testing at all. People who do have, unfortunately, fatal overdoses, often if heroin is seen to be present, we won't do a detailed analysis, or many countries don't have the capacity to look really in detail about what's going on there. So I think forensic and toxicological resources are really important. And they're also important against this whole thing in synthetic, increase in synthetic products more generally, because you can't rely on case reports, self-report data in the way we once did. People often don't know what they're taking. And again, one of the resources we've been developing at the Monitoring Centre is working with pill testing, drug testing services. And they're a very important source of what's happening in the consumer market. And we match that with also data coming from law enforcement bodies in terms of drug seizures. And from that, you can begin to piece together the kinds of substances we see out there. And they're often now complicated mixtures, or what people think. I mean, the issue in the UK was at first probably what people thought was heroin wasn't heroin. It was increasing. We're seeing nitrazines mixed up in ways with other substances to appear to look like street heroin. So, you know, really, you need this forensic and toxicological backup to really understand what's being consumed, especially in more complicated mixtures. Beyond that, I think we're also looking at more rapid reporting. So wastewater is a good example of that. Wastewater has some issues with it's at the moment the concentrations of synthetic opioids and their prevalence means that they're not being picked, don't get very reliable signals, I think, in the wastewater. Think about wastewater technology, the chemists involved in that area of work have been very, very good at, over time, improving the sensitivity and specificity of the methods. And they've made the method much, much better over time and addressing problems. So I think that's something at the moment, perhaps not for the synthetic opioids, that very useful in terms of routine sampling, maybe some role in terms of site sampling, where you go into a community or environment and take a site sample and look at the drugs there. But a little bit challenging, but could if the prevalence rises and over time, address some of the scientific issues in that area, it may be something that's useful. The thing about that information source, it provides very rapid, almost real-time information. And I think, again, I was talking to some of the Irish colleagues recently, and one of the issues they had is simply picking up on the fact that they were facing a mass overdose event. So they had a lot of overdoses in a very, very short period of time. And actually, a lot of that was the sort of warning signals of that were coming up through the ambulance service. The ambulance was just being overwhelmed with. So the question is, how also do you develop real-time information systems that can help inform your responses? Yeah, so it's one thing us reporting about it in Lisbon, but it's also, you know, how do you pick up that you may be facing an acute outbreak of poisonings in a time period where you can respond to that, you can galvanize your response, you can get the harm reduction messages out to the communities you need to work with, and even just deciding what are the appropriate responses. So I think there's a whole issue about early warning or risk communication. How do you respond rapidly to problems that may overwhelm services or happen at such a speed that you may not, your typical response measures just may struggle to keep up with them. And it's a really different model of the kinds of issues we face when we're looking, to some extent at least, at overdoses for. And then the other thing I would be, certainly we're going to invest in, is both seeing, actually, are we going to see, you know, we're predicating this on the fact that we're going to see a heroin shortage later this year. There's some evidence that markets are acting a little bit odd at the moment already. Okay. And there's also some evidence that regardless of that, organised crime groups who are looking at the synthetic opiates with new interest, regardless of what's happening in terms of heroin supply, because it simply reduces risks, increases profits. So, you know, why wouldn't you? So we do need, I think, to put up monitoring, both looking at what's happening in Afghanistan, with the UNODC are doing some good work in that, and we're working closely with them, but also looking at what's happening on supply routes from that country. Nobody's talking about it, but I think it's going to be very important for the future what's happening in the countries that surround Afghanistan, where actually, if you look at the international figures, you'd expect the largest populations of opiate-using populations to exist. So if I'm thinking countries like Pakistan and Iran. So what's going to happen there if there's a shortage? How's that going to impact on the drug market there? And in turn, how does that impact on the market elsewhere? And we see there also Afghanistan's been a major, started producing quite significant amounts of methamphetamine recently. We're seeing that also a crackdown on methamphetamine, but we're seeing again at least some signals that methamphetamine production may be diffusing in that region, moving to other countries. And again, there might be a shift in some of these really very large populations towards that drug. And again, how would that affect the European situation, you know, 5 or 10 years hence? So I think these are things that are quite, you know, we have to look at not just start supply and demand, but drug markets as complex dynamic things that interact, and those interactions cause the health and social problems that we end up facing, you know, in our clinical work or in our responses. So I think really what we, in terms of information collection, we need to improve our traditional methods. How do we look at and record data on overdose deaths? There's a lot of work that needs to be done there. It's very much configured to the old issues with heroin. We need to develop new methods like wastewater, and what's working with drug consumption centres in some countries, pill testing and drug testing services in other countries, developing more sensitive, timely methods. We need to look at what's happening and improve the analysis of data that's coming from law enforcement sources. And we also need to put that all together in terms of early warning response capacity that allow us to respond more rapidly to a little bit, I think, more complex and possibly more faster moving problems than we used to face in the past. And just last one on that, I think there is assumption at the moment, and it's what really point we made another point, where the models and response methods we've developed historically to heroin are going to necessarily just snap in and be appropriate to the synthetic opioids. And I think there's various things about their pharmacology and the patterns of use and modes of administration that might not make that true. And there's all issues about the extent to which you implications has for overdose harm reduction using agonists, for example. And I really think we need to start building up that research evidence base if we're going to be more prepared to respond to these substances. We can't simply assume that our evidence base for heroin can be simply applied to these new drugs and the complicated ways that they're used.
And would you say, as a final question, that we have at least a heads up, or we have time, that we have seen what's happened in North America, so we maybe have the time to get these processes prepared, get the, like you said, the wastewater, the early warning system, the overdose alerts in place?
I think going back to when we saw the rise in the MPS supplements the first time around, we were quite lucky in Europe that we had asked after a real shock through when XDM and MDA first appeared in the market. It really thrown the policy makers out of step a little bit. They were quite, get suddenly this new drug appeared in a new population in a way, and it really caught people by surprise. We invested in an early warning system there, and it really didn't do much for a few years. That it used to, you know, it looked great, but it didn't have a lot to do. And then suddenly the NPS came in, and suddenly we had really had the capacity to pick up on developments much more rapidly than other parts of the world. In the EU, my agency will be given new competencies and capacities in July this year. We've changed to the new EUDA, the new European Union's Drugs Agency. And one of the things there that we'll be investing in is a new forensic and toxicological laboratory network linked to our epidemiological and our therapeutic and our response network. So we're trying to feed those questions that are coming up into get some of the lab science that we need to back up our responses, both in terms of identifying change, but also in how should we respond to some of these new drugs. However, what I am seeing now over 23 and beginning of 24 is we're seeing a lot of signals and a lot of concerns. We've seen outbreaks in Dublin, in Cork. I've seen issues in the reunion. We're seeing a lot of problems in the Baltic countries, escalating overdose rates. I've seen samples from mid-European countries from law enforcement. They've seen seized what appears to be heroin. It's turned out to be mixtures of nitrazines made to look like street drugs. At least I've heard some discussions that may be happening, probably better way to put it. We know that these things in the modern drug market and modern drug problems can change really very, very rapidly. And I think that's one of the messages that, looking at the North American situation, really, I'd hammer in, you know, the sort of when I started, things 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 years was in terms of how drug problems emerge. These days, you know, you can see the very different situation within 3 or 4 months. And I'm certainly quite worried by the data we're getting now from the preliminary data from 2023, where we see certainly in the Baltics and a few other countries, nitrazines appearing and playing much driving trends in drug mortality, to put it bluntly. And the potential of that to spread. We've also had some of the warning signs we've seen in the UK recently, and some of and Ireland and some other countries. So I think that really is actually a quite a pressing need, and we may see over 24 and 25 some quite dramatic developments with one, like, if in a worst case scenario, that we will need to respond to. So I'm a little bit worried at the moment in terms of the speed of some of the developments we're seeing, and also really reconfiguring our research takes time, but, you know, what are the implications for clinical responses, both in terms of treatment, but in terms of harm reduction, in terms of what we do at policy level and regulatory level, or even in terms of law enforcement?
Great. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you, and I've certainly learned a lot on synthetic opioids in Europe. Thank you.
Thank you.